Okay. Morning. Today's daf is Tzadi Tes and Shabbos, page 99 of the Masechta. We're on Tzadi Ches Amud Beis, and we are continuing from where we left off yesterday. We're describing the Mishkan. The reason why we're describing the Mishkan is because the halachas of Otzah come from the Mishkan, or derived from the Mishkan, and so therefore it's important to realize how they actually traveled within the Mishkan. We talked about the Agalos yesterday, the wagons, Merari. Were instructed and charged with the carrying of the kerashim, of the beams of the Mishkan. So there were 48 beams of the Mishkan. The height of the Mishkan was 10 amos tall, so it's about 20 feet, approximately, 15 to 20 feet. And so that means that they would have four wagons, and on the four wagons, the 48 kerashim were placed on there. So that means a distribution of 12 kerashim per the wagons. We basically know the kerashim, the dimensions of the kerashim. We went over it yesterday. They're 10 amas high, and they're an amma by an amma and a half. Okay, a rectangular shape in terms of length and in terms of width. The only thing that we're unsure about, because the machlokas in yesterday's daf, is whether they were tapered towards the top. So the machlokas amongst the Tanaim, whether they were tapered to the top, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. And so the Gemara brings down a machlokas, and if they were tapered to the top, so in terms of aesthetics, I guess it looks a little bit nicer, but that's a question of an opinion. So you can go either way with that. In terms of halachically, kind of helped us yesterday because there was more room on the wagons. And for yesterday's daf, we needed more rooms on the wagons. We were talking about the airspace that was created between the kerashim. And so therefore, if they were tapered towards the top, so you had a lot more airspace, and that was better for us in yesterday's daf, halachically. But, okay, this comes down to machlokas. What do the Pesukim indicate? So that's exactly what they're arguing about. They're arguing about what the Pesukim indicate. There are pasuk, the Pesuk indicates that they were tapered. There was a Pesuk that indicates that they were squared. Okay, hard to imagine over here. You could say, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But if you're creative, you can somehow figure it out how Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Okay, and that's basically what we got to yesterday. And we're continuing in the Gemara today. We are in the middle of Tzadi Ches Amud Beis, right, the two dots. We're talking about the Briach. Briach Hetichon. Now, how do these kerashim, which were very narrow and very tall, so how did they stand? How did they remain standing? And they were laid side by side one another. So what were they used to support? So they had a support beam. They basically, plenty of seats up here.
If you come late, you got to sleep.
That's, you know, reward. What? So the there is a supporting beams. In other words, and there was a hole dug into each one of the kerashim so that you had a beam, a metal rod, going through the kerashim. Now it's going to be a little bit challenging because in order to get that metal rod through, so it's going to make two left turns or two right turns, depending on which way you're coming from. But how did that work exactly? So the Braisa goes on to describe. Abriachatichon besocha kerashim. So it was besocha kerashim was in the beams. But that's all the Braisa tells us. Sorry, that's all the Pasuk tells us. Tana, now the Gemara quotes a Braisa, B'nesaya Omeid. They were there miraculously. The miracle is, explains Rashi, is that the metal rod made those left turns. So as you put the metal rod through, so it actually made those left turns. It's a long metal rod, meaning that the when you put the 20 of them side by side, and each one is an amma and a half, so you're talking about 30 ammas, plus another 30 ammas, plus another 10 ammas on the back end of the wall. So just roughly, it comes out to like a 70 amma long metal rod. Okay, but anyway, but it's B'nai Zayi Omei.
There's a Mishkan
Tase, I see you.
How did they carry that?
How did they carry that? Yeah, who carried that? Okay, I don't know. There's a Mishkan Tase, I see you, Rios. So now the Gemara is going to go through a little bit more of the structure and the architecture of the Mishkan. Relevant to our discussion because we're discussing whether the kerashim were tapered on the top or they were not tapered on the top. And we discussed now in terms of the roof of the Mishkan. The roof of the Mishkan, interestingly enough, the Torah says that the roof was not constructed of a hard material. It wasn't wood. It wasn't metal. But the roof was actually curtains. Curtains laid one on top of the other. On today's daf, which we'll get to, God willing, we're going to learn that there were basically are two layers of curtains. One made up of basically wool and the other one made up of goat hair. Okay. But right now we're just putting certain dimensions together. Now, basically, the roof of the Mishkan was a tablecloth. Let's say nice and simply. It was just this big tablecloth that was spread on the top of the Mishkan, and it was made in a way where basically it draped over. It draped over the sides and it draped over the back. So the Shmona ve'esrim ba'ama. So the Gemara says, let's do the configuration. Shadi Archai Lepucho, the Mishkan, Kamehi Esrim Vitamne. So the Gemara says that the total length of the Mishkan was how much? It was 28. Dal Esther Le'igra, so now take away 10 for the roof. So Pashalu Tes, Lahaigisa, Tes Lahaigisa. In other words, we're basically now draping over the curtain. We're looking at the curtain, if you want to see it a little bit better. We're basically, the length of each one of the curtains is 28 amas. And we're draping it over the top of the Mishkan. So I'm looking now directly at the Mishkan, and obviously the tent is going to fold over. So the Gemara now notes that it's 10 amas from this point to this point, a total of 10 amas. So then it's going to be 9 draping over on each side, going down over the walls of the sides of the Mishkan. And the Gemara goes on to describe. Parshlu Tesla Hagisa Tesla Hagisa La Rav Yehuda Migla Amada Danim. Now according to Rav Yehuda, remember, there was no tapering according to Rav Yehuda. So that means that according to Rav Yehuda, the thickness of the walls actually absorbed some of the length of the curtain. So that means that as the curtain was going down, it only went down 9 amos. So now that the curtain only goes down 9 amas, so what do you see? You see 1 am of the wall. Now, as we're going to learn later today, the bottom of each one of the krashim had a silver socket. Silver socket that was 1 amma high and actually was inserted into the krashim. We'll talk about that later today. In the meantime, however, so now that we're looking at the Mishkan from the outside and you see the curtain draped over, the only thing revealed is the last amma of the Mishkan, which happens to have been the Adonim. So in other words, the silver socket is the only thing that showed. And Lerab Nechamia Milgla Amma Dekrashim Shadi Puchar La Orcha De Mishkan Kamahave Arbain Dal Tosin La Igra Pashlahu Yud. So the according to Reb Nechamia, you're going to be left with 10 on each side because according to Reb Nechamia, on the top there was no width of the walls because it was tapered to what we described yesterday as just an etzba. So in other words, after it comes down, it just basically goes straight down. Now, again,
Rabbi Yehuda was on
a taper. Correct. So that means now that as the curtains were going down, because the size of the curtains was a constant, it was 28 amas. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it actually continued to go down all the way past the Adonim. Now, just mathematically, there's going to be a little bit of exposure of the Adonim because it didn't go straight down, it went down on a little bit of an angle. So it's the hypotenuse of 10 amas. But whatever the case is, the point being, however, is obviously because there's no thickness of the wall, it's going to drape all the way down. The Asisa Yiriyot Yizim La'ol Orecha Yiriyach Ashloshim Ba'ama Shadi Orcha Lepucha Demishkan Kamahavit Talsin. So the Gemara says, now we're talking about the next curtain that's put over that, and that's the Yiriyas Ha'izim. That's the goat hair curtain, which was placed over the wool curtain. So Dal Esther Le'igra Pashlu Esther La'haygisa V'Esther La'haygisa L'Rav Yehuda Machse Amad Da'adanim and L'Rav Nechemya Miglei Amad Da'adanim. And again, once you drape over the goat hair curtain, so how far is it going to go down the side? So same story. So according to Rabbi Nechemya, the Adonim are going to be exposed, because the thickness of the walls on top are going to take an amma, and according to Rav Yehuda, it's also going to go all the way down to the ground. Okay, and the Gemara quotes the Brisa, and the Brisa teaches us exactly the same point. Mem the arba. So the Gemara says now, as we stitch together each one of the Yerios, so we're going to have now a total of 44 amas. So 44 amas, Dal Tilson Le'igra. Now, the total length of the Mishkan from the front to the back, we're not going side to side now, we're going from the front to the back, was 30 amas. Pashaluhu Arbasrei, Dal Tarte Le'kafla, Dechsi Ve'chafaltes Yiriyah Hashishis El Mulpanei Ha'Oel. Now, on the front of the Mishkan, where you enter into the Mishkan, that would be on the east side of the Mishkan, so there would be a little bit of the tablecloth, so to say, draped over the front. So El Mulpaneo Pashlu Tartisray. So Bisham Larav Yunain Dichtiv Khati Ayuras are defos tisrach. Now the Gemara says, now according to Rav Yehuda, it kind of works out, because now as you go all the way to the back end, it's going to lay out on the back end. So the Gemara says, but according to Rav Nechemia, what does it mean, tisrach? It's not tailing off at the back. So the Gemara says, tisrach mechaversa. Yeah, but it's longer than its friend. So once it's longer than its friend, so we're going to say tisrach. Tana debe Rav Yishmael, lama mishka ndoma le'isha shemalachis b'shuk v'shifula mahalkin achareha. And the Mishkan is like a woman, in the sense that as you basically look at this draped Mishkan, and we're now talking about the back end of the Mishkan, where we just described that, at least according to one opinion, the Gemara, it not only goes down, but it basically drapes behind the Mishkan on the floor, so much like a woman. When a woman is wearing her clothing, so her skirt's going to go down to the floor and basically drop behind her. So the Gemara says another imagery between the Mishkan and a woman. Tana de Bei Rav Yishmael, lama Mishkan dama leisha shemalachas b'shuk. I just read that. Sorry. Tana Rabbanan. Okay. And now we go back to the Krashim. Okay, and the conclusion of the sugya will basically be a description, a detailed description of the Krashim. Tana Rabbanan Chavrutim Hayu Krashim VeChalulim Hayu Adonim. Okay, there's a picture in the Gemara itself to try to help us visualize and see this. But basically, look, the Krashim are a rectangle. It's a rectangular shape. It's an amma by an amma and a half. So its shape is rectangular, and it's 10 ammas high. And then there were two silver sockets. Now, the two silver sockets did not take any of the dimensions away. Did not take the height away, nor did it take the width away. So how did it work? So how does that work? It's very simple. Amazing. Basically, what we did is we chiseled out the bottom amma so that there were only two pegs existing from the bottom amma, and the adonim fit into those two pegs. You can see Rashi for more description of the dimensions. Yeah, kind of like a plug. Yeah, that's a good visual. And the adonim are placed on that. Venirin krusin. We're now on the top of the Tzadi Testament off today's daf. Venirin krusin. Belula os kekochavim berakia. Now, when you were inside the Mishkan and you looked up, those lulaos, those hooks, basically look like stars in the sky. Rashi says this is an unrelated point to the Krashim. Why is it here? I don't know. But the basic point is as follows. As we described earlier, each one of the curtains was 28 amas in length and four amas in width, and they were 10 stitched together. Well, the stitching together was stitching, but then what happens is that you basically stitch five together and five together. And then to put the five and five together, they were hooked one to another with golden hooks. There were 50 golden hooks that basically were connected to loops at the end of each one of the urios. And the loops were then attached to the hooks so that the five and five were hooked together one to another. The hooks were made out of gold so that when you looked inside, you basically looked up and those hooks glittered like stars in the sky. Tanu Rabban, the Gemara continues, top line at Sadi Tesamad Aleph, Yiriyos, Tachtona, Shal Tchelus, Shal Agamam, Shal Tola Shani, Vishal Sheish. Okay, so as I basically described earlier, there were two tablecloths spread over the top of the Mishkan. So the lower one, the one that you saw from inside, so that's made out of three different dyed wools. One wool dyed Tchelus, which is blue, the other one Argamon, purple, the other one is Tola Shani, which is red. And Shal Sheish, and it was also made out of linen as well. Okay, it was shatnez, which, first of all, the Kohanim wore shatnez, so under certain circumstances, shatnez was permitted. And additionally, no one's wearing this, so there's no problem of making shatnez and using it as a roof. It's just simply that's how the Torah demands it. And then the next one above it is Vishavel Yonashal Maisa Izim. The next one above it was Maisa Izim. It was made up of goat hair. Okay, which took more skill to make? The one that took more skill to make, interestingly enough, says the Gemara, is the goat hair curtain. The ilu betachtonos ksiv v'chalisha chachmas lebiada tavu v'ilu be'elyonos ksiv v'chalanashem asher nasa liban osana b'chachmatavu es ha'izim. Sorry, Osana b'chachma. So the Gemara compares the psukim describing the construction of the goat here with the construction of the wool, and basically it's the lashon by the goat here seems to be that there was more chachma involved, right? Nasa liban. It literally means that lifted their hearts. It's a lashon that sounds like it took more skill. What exactly took more skill making the goat here? So if I knew how to construct, I'm sure I would understand. The Gemara, however, over here gives us somewhat of an insight. Tavu se'izim. V'tanya mishum Rabbi Nechemya shatav be'izim v'tavu min ha'izim. We saw the Gemara earlier that when they prepared the goat here, they prepared the goat here while it was still attached to the goat. Now, why that should be? On the simplest level, perhaps it's just that once you detach from the goat, it's no longer... It's now manufactured, it's dirtier, in other words, it's more pristine, it's more virgin while it's still on the goat, and that's why, okay, yeah, perhaps that's it, and that's why they processed it while it was still connected to the goat. Is this specific to the goat, or is it also applied to the sheep and the wool as well? It's unclear. It sounds like from our Gemara, as the Gemara is putting them side by side, it sounds like this was specific to the manufacturing of the goat, of the matted goat hair, as opposed to the wool. Shtei gezus traos. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia, Agalos Tachtem, Avanim, V'tzirim, Rishat Sarabim. The Brais of Rabbi Chia we saw yesterday, that the area between, below, and directly next to the wagons are all considered the status of Rishat Sarabim. Now, Amar Abai Ben Agal Agal Kamale Erech Agal. Okay, we did this yesterday. I'll just quickly throw this up again today. We're now talking about the formation of the Agalas as they traveled in the Midbar. So each Agala was 5 Amas long, 2.5 Amas wide. Here's another wagon that ran alongside it, same dimensions. There were wheels. Yesterday someone asked me about the height of the Agalas. I clearly didn't prepare yesterday's daf today. Today's daf yesterday. Rashi is going to talk about the height of the agalos. Anyway, so 2.5 and 2.5, and together with the wheels, a total of 5 amas. The wheels add another am and a quarter on each side, and so this also total is going to be 5 amas. And what the Gemara is about to teach us is the distance between each of the agalos is 5 amas. Now, is that an arbitrary figure, that 5 amas between? No, it's not. Because remember, what we did is that we placed the krashim on top of the agalos. The krashim are end-to-end 10 amas. So end-to-end 10 amas, you're going to assume that we're going to center it right over here. So that means now that when the two wagons are going side by side, so that there's going to be now a 5 amah distance between them, so that they're running right along side by side. Okay.
Very close. They're going to touch.
It's very close. Okay. The Gemara is going to point out that the Bnei Merari walked alongside. Just make sure nothing will happen. Those of you are now looking at this picture in the totality. So the following question should surface, which is that the total end from one wagon to the other is going to be 15 amas. Now, what is the width of a Rishos HaRabim? The width of Rishos HaRabim is 16 amas. So one amah discrepancy, the Gemara is going to be bothered by that as well. Let's see the Gemara inside. Whoa. What just happened here? Yes.
Huh? You have an extension going out to the side. You're saying 15 amahs just for the wagons, but the...
No, that's where the...
Well, you're talking about the krashim.
Yes.
The krashim even go beyond that.
Yeah.
2 krashim of 10 amahs side by side is 20 amahs. I could have made that point as well. The Gemara does not make that point. Rashi, however, does make that point. Okay, I'll show you the Rashi. Okay.
Why was it necessary to have it so close to each other?
What was the point?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we always take a minimalist approach, meaning if they could go side by side, then we're going to put them side by side. But outside of that, I don't know. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia, Rishum Rabbi Chia, Gal Tachtem Avneir V'Tzidem Rishos HaRabim. Amar Abaye Ben Agala Agala Kamala Aruch Agala. The distance between each Agala was the length of Agala. So the length of Agala is 5 amas. The distance between them is also 5 amas, illustrated over there. The Kama Aruch Agala He Amas. Salamali Bedal Rupaga Saga. Now the Gemara starts off with the following question: why did the length of these wagons have to be 5 amas? Now look. We said that the purpose of these wagons is to carry the krashim. We also said yesterday, and we're saying it right now again today, that the dimensions of the Keresh is an amma by an amma and a half. So you could put it on the thin side, you could put it on the wide side, you could choose. But let's even put it on the wide side, okay? So we're going to lay it down on the wide side, so it's an amma and a half. We're going to lay down another one, and we're going to lay down another one. So that's a total of 4.5 ammas. From end to end, it's going to be a 4.5 ammas. And essentially what the Gemara wants to know is, why did the wagon have to be 5 ammas? Couldn't the wagon have just simply been 4.5 ammas? Again, it's that minimalist idea, meaning we'll make do with whatever we need. You know, we're not going to need more than that. So the Gemara's answer is, ki hechi delo lid chaku krashim. All right. Answer says, the Gemara is that we want a little space between the krashim. Krashim are going to be rubbing up against one another, and not good for the krashim. So we want to give a little bit of space. So we make the wagon 5 amas. Amar avetzida agala kamola rachav agala v'kama rachav agala shte amas amechsa. Lamali ba'amasa pagasaga. The Gemara says the width of the wagon is 2.5 amas. Does it really need to be 2.5 amas? Meaning we just want to balance the krashim on top of the wagon. Can it be that it's an amma and a half? So the Gemara says, "Keheche delo lidadu krashim." Yes, says the Gemara, an amma and a half. Try to balance the 10 amma beam on an amma and a half surface base. So the Gemara says, "Not good. Everything's going to fall, and it's not good. So the wagon's going to now be 2.5, a quarter of the total length. And I guess that's more support. I mean, look, if it were 5 amma, it'd be more support. If the wagons were 10 amma, that'd be even more support. So, you know, these answers are, you know, just to help us. They're not. There's got to be more to it. Okay, it could be. As I mentioned yesterday, the number of configurations are endless and limitless, and apparently we have a tradition that this is basically how it went, and then within the tradition, we're working within the configuration.
You thought of having one in front of the other, mm-hmm. alongside?
Okay.
That would have solved it.
Okay. So again, many possible configurations. Ella dekaimelan derech rishus ramah sheshes reyama. So the Gemara says, now look, the total distance from end to end is going to be is 15, as we already indicated. But the Gemara notes that, and we saw this earlier in the Masechta, that the Rishus HaRabim is Shesh Esrei Amma. It's a total of 16 Ammas. That's what makes the Rishus HaRabim. And essentially what's built into this question is the assumption that this is the Makor of Rishus HaRabim. Meaning you want to know, where did that number come from, 16 Ammas? So now that you know the wagon structure, and you know the wagon configuration, so this is it. Meaning it all comes from here. But if it all comes from here, so then it shouldn't be 15, it should be 16. So the Mishkan turns out to be 15. So where do we go from 15 to 16? So Amsa Yisera Havai. So the Gemara says, yeah, we got to add another Amma. Why? Because basically what would happen is that the Ben Levi would be walking on the side. And since he would be walking on the side, so an extra amma was given so that if, in the event that the krashim were to fall, there is a Ben Levi to pick it up. Now, the answer is somewhat of an answer, meaning I understand a little bit, but basically what you're doing is you're giving a half an amma on each side. The general width of a person is an amma. So if you're going to have a Ben Levi standing on each one of the sides, So really, you should be giving an amma on each side, so it should go from 15 to 17. Okay, so again, I understand these answers to a certain degree, not totally. Why not count the beams, right? This is what bothered you. Well, why not count the beams? Meaning, if we're really looking at this as our prototype of what the Rishus HaRabim is, so shouldn't the beams count towards that Rishus HaRabim? And end to end, the beams are 20 amas. So what happened to the beams? Why are we ignoring the beams? So Rashi deals with this. So Rashi says, the Rashi of Chametzrei Havyan. See, it's on the side of the Gemara. It's right. It's basically in the middle. So Shei Agal Zalchos Zubet Zadzu Rachav Kolachas Heamos Are Yud VeHeamos Revach Shebein Agal Agal Are Tezvav VeIm Tomer. So Rashi here asks the question. So what are you talking about? Shouldn't it be even just more than 20? Sharei krushim orchan yudamos, because the keresh itself are 10 amos long. Vein mutalos agabe dofne agala l'rachva, and they were placed on the wagon as we have over there. Nimsa orecha krushim arechaf amos levad mashit zarech limshoch. Karshe kol agala v'agala tzad achitzen shel agala shelo yagiu roshe akrushim zubazu. And it's really even more than 20 amos because, Phil, you made this point earlier, they're not going to have the krushim touch one another. There's going to be some space between the two wagons running alongside one another. So it's even more than 20 amas. So, ume'akvin esahilach ha'agalos. So, ain ze tshuva. So Rashi says, it's not a question. I know he used the word tshuva, but here he means question. Ain ze tshuva, Rashi says, don't worry about that. Sha'akrashim lamala me'asara hain. So, because the krashim went above 10 tfachim. Now, here I said it correctly. It went above 10 tfachim. Sha'agala gavol yod, because the actual wagon was higher than 10 tefachim. Right? Somebody asked me this yesterday. How high were the wagons? So they're higher than 10 tefachim. Ulegabe rishos harabim leislan lemechshev. So vis-a-vis rishos harabim, don't consider it. Because as we've discussed time and again, and especially in Perek HaZorik, we said this a number of times, rishos harabim ends at the 10 tefachim mark. So since these krushim are in the air suspended above 10 tefachim, so therefore they're not considered part of the dimensions of the rishos harabim, only the wagons themselves. Adkan. Okay, that takes us through the end of this discussion. We're now finished with the dimensions of the krushim. We talked a little bit about the urios. We talked about how the urios were draped over the sides. We talked about the urios draped over the back. We spoke about the two layers of the urios, one wool, one of goat. And then the Gemara ends the discussion by looking at how they actually rode side by side.
Yes, but now we have a 5-amah half-sick between the two wagons.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the rishos harabim. That's the brisa. Now, right now, you get a deeper appreciation of the brisa. Amar mishum Rabbi Chiya, agalos tachteim v'beneim utzideim. Rishos harabim. That's exactly the point of the brisa. That area in between is also part of the rishos harabim.
This all started with discussion about whether rishos harabim is covered.
This all started because the Gemara says, Rav said, that was yesterday's stuff. Rav said the rishos harabim can't be covered because there was no roof.
But does this mean that the covering was above 10 tefachim?
No, the two things we're talking about. They were talking about the Mishkan in transport, and we're talking about the Mishkan as it's set up. The Mishkan as it's set up obviously has a roof over the top. But we're talking now about about it being disassembled and transporting it. So while disassembled, while transporting it, so we're transporting it, that's the rishos harabim. That's the public thoroughfare.
And it has a cup now.
No, there was no
cup. Now the beams partially covered it, but as the Gemara argued yesterday, that right going back to yesterday's daf, is that there was space between the beams. Now the way I drew it, there's very little space between the beams. So the Gemara yesterday didn't like my configuration. Well, the one I have on the board, the Gemara says don't do that. Okay, so that just means that I did a good job listening to yesterday's daf. Right, don't do that because I only have just a small amount. So, but basically what we did is either you'll argue that the beams were tapered, so that'll give you more space, or you'll argue that they were put not on the wide side, they were put on the narrower side.
What if they're just talking about like a lot of transport, there are a lot of other things that the beam carrying on their shoulders and so on, but they didn't have any cover.
Right, but to get to the 16 amos of what is defined as a rishos harabim, so this is how we get there, to the 16 amos.
There's no conclusion that a rishos harabim is covered?
Yeah, the Gemara stands by Rav. The Gemara supports Rav. A rishos harabim that has any type of awning or roof over is not a rishos harabim.
Whether it's above or below 10
tefachim. Seemingly. It doesn't... Right, it's a fair question, I'm not sure. But seemingly does not matter. We start now with the Mishnah, and here we are. This Mishnah really gives the ground rules of the Melech of Hotzah. Now, we've been saying this for a while. In other words, we kind of already know the ground rules, but here we're going to give very real definitions of what is a Rishos HaYachid, transferring from Rishos HaRabim to Rishos HaYachid. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Chulia Sabor Vasela, if I have a mound of dirt, or if I have a rock, Sheingvona Sarah. Now it is a solid rock. No, don't worry. Don't apologize. It is a solid rock. It's not a house. No one's living inside of it. It is just a massive rock. Now I say massive, it's not really that big. It's 10 tefachim high, so it's 30 inches off the ground. But, and It is Gvon Asar V'Rachman Arba. Now it is four wide. Now at any time the Mishnah says four, it means 4x4. So okay, so your dimensions are very simple. It's 10 tefachim high. It's 4x4 wide. So if I transfer from a Rishus HaRabim to the rock, or from the rock to the Rishus HaRabim, you're going to be chayiv. That rock is a Rishus HaYachid, and therefore a transfer from the rock to the street or from the street to the rock would result in a chiyuv of the Malach of Hotzah. Pachos mikan, the Mishnah says, but anything less than that, potter, you're going to be exempt. Now, lamalu lemisnah chulyas abor v'asela lisnei abor v'asela. So it says chulyas abor. Just why not say bor? Why not say sela? What does that mean? Chulyas abor. So the Gemara says it sounds like our Mishnah is making an additional chiddush. Misayel the Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rabbi Yochanan bor v'chulyas mitzarfin laasara. A mound plus the hole is mitzarif laasara. So that means the following. By the way, you'll notice I keep writing on this board and on this one. This is a smart board. That's not a whiteboard. Now, this comes as news to me, as I'm a little bit more old-fashioned in the whole teaching world. I know that sounds funny. So, but I started writing with this on the smart board. That's not what's supposed to be done. Anyway, here's the ground. Okay? And let's make little walls. Let's even say that these walls are 5 amas high. And then I have a pit over here. And let's say the pit is 5 amas deep. And maybe what the Mishnah is trying to teach us is that I can take the height of the walls, combine it with the depth of the pit, to result in 10 tefachim, and so that would be now a Rishus HaYachid. So it doesn't need to be 10 tefachim above ground level, doesn't mean 10 tefachim totally below the ground level, but it could be a mixture of the two, and that would combine. Now the Mishnah doesn't say it, but the Gemara says, well, Rav Yochanan does say it, and it could be that that's what our Mishnah is referring to. The Amar Rav Yochanan Bor v'Chuliyasim Itzarim Flan La'Asar Tanya Namihach. The Gemara quotes a Brice as well. Bor v'Rishus HaRabim Amuka Yud v'Rach V'Arba Ein Mamalim Men Men B'Shabbos. So if I have a pit in the Rishus HaRabim and it's 10 tefachim deep, so I can't draw water from that pit on Shabbos, assuming that the area right around the pit is a Rishus HaRabim, because that's a transfer from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim. Top of Sadi Tesamud Beis. Unless it has a wall which is a 10 tefachim around, meaning unless the area around the pit is itself a Rishus HaYachid, then I'd be allowed to transfer from the contents of the pit to me standing right above the pit. Second parak of Erevin. Okay, if I can give you like a sneak preview of things to come. Second parak of Erevin is dedicated exclusively to this topic of creating walls around the surrounding, around the pit, so that I can draw from the well, especially when we're traveling. Right? How do I make makeshift walls in order to go around? That's your second chapter of Erevin. So Alim Ken Asala Mechitza Gaval Yutvachim Ein Shosim Emen B'Shabbos Alim Ken Hechnes La Rosh Verubo. And if you want to drink from the well, And you're in the Rishus HaRabim, the well is right up against the Rishus HaRabim, so what do? So basically, you got to lean over. Now, make sure not to fall in, but not only do you have to lean over, the majority of your body has to be in the airspace of the well. May Iker Adin, according to strict letter of the law, you only need your head in there, but the Chachamim were worried that you'll put your head inside, you'll drink the water, you'll bring your head back out, and that's transportation, that's carrying on Shabbos. So therefore, the majority of your body has to be over the walls. And finally, Bor v'chuyasam et starfin la'asara. It's this part of the Braisa that we wanted to see in the context of our Gemara, which is Bor v'chuyasam. That it doesn't have to be 10 deep, it could be 5 deep, there could be a little rim around of 5, and 5 plus 5 equals 10. And not only is 5 plus 5 equal 10, look what you came and learned at the daf today. Not only is 5 plus 5 equal 10, but it actually creates a Rishus HaYachid. We can combine the two. You could have made the argument, no, I only will look at the depth, I'll only look at the height, I'm not going to look at the two of them together. Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is, no, I'd look at the two of them together. Okay. Baminei Rav Mordechai Meirava. A following question was asked. Amud B'Rishus HaRabim Gavol Yud V'Rachav Dalin. Okay, the question is going to sound so simple, right? It's almost like it's a setup. Okay, so, I mean, simple. I mean, based on what we learned so far. If I have a pillar that's 10 tefachim high, and 4x4 tefachim wide, and vizark v'nachag above, and I take an item and I throw it onto the top of this pillar, and I threw it, and I'm standing in the Rishus HaRabim, and I threw it onto this pillar. Mahu. What's the halacha? Now, as I mentioned just a moment ago, it sounds like this is a really a no-brainer. It's simple. Meaning, what did I do? I threw something from a Rishus HaRabim to what is a Rishus Yachid. So, am I going to be chayiv? Yes or no? Mi amrinan hare akira b'isr, hare hanacha b'isr. So look, the akira and the hanacha are both b'isr. Meaning, I picked it up in the Rishus HaRabim. I put it down in the Rishus Yachid. End of discussion. Odilma came and demi makam pater ka asya lo. Or the Gemara says, it comes mi makam pater. What does that mean?
But by dimensions, it's not.
Well, here, let's see it. So that way you'll understand. I'm standing in the Rishus HaRabim. Here's the pillar. The pillar, it's a solid mass. And I'm throwing something onto the top of the pillar. Now, as we already noted, in the Rishus HaRabim, has a ceiling. A ceiling of 10 tefachim. So, in order for my throw to have been a successful throw, it needs just a little bit of arc. And in that arc, now, for most of the journey of that item, it went through a makom pater. Now, I know this sounds familiar. I know we've dealt with this question in various forms. But this is Zrika. This is where I'm throwing. So in other words, while I'm not holding it, we already discussed, I'm holding an item in a Rishus HaRabim, that item's in the Rishus HaRabim. Even if I hold it up, it's still in the Rishus HaRabim. But here I let go of the item. So now the item is traversing through the makom pater. I'll give you a sneak preview of what we're going to discuss in just a moment. Where does the makom pater end? You could make the argument that the makom pater ends right here. Now, for those listening at you at home, you're really at a disadvantage. But the makom pater ends here because what we discussed earlier is that the Rishus HaYachid Olel Rakia, it continues to go up. However, we could argue, I'll tell you who's going to argue that in just a moment, the makom pater actually extends until when the item actually lands on the top over there. I'll come back to that in just a moment. Anyway, so this is the Gemara's question. So the answer is, did you learn the Mishnah in the 11th parak of Shabbos? Isn't that exactly what our Mishnah is talking about? So also, Shalom Rav Yosef, now he shops his question around. He goes to Rav Yosef, Amalei Masisani. Rav Yosef's answer is also, it's a Mishnah. Also, Shalom Abaye, he goes to Abaye, Amalei Masisani. And Abaye says, it's a Mishnah. Amar luhu kucha baroka dahada de tafisu. It's an interesting expression of the Gemara. You're all spitting the same spit. No creative thinking going on over here. No original thought. Everyone's just simply looking at the Mishnah saying, hey, it's the Mishnah. Recycle. It's funny, I would have said the same thing also. But Amar leva atlo tizbro, so they say to him, this is Rav Mordechai here who's stirring the pot. So Amar leva atlo tizbro, well, you don't think so as well? V'hatzanan, I mean, let's learn the Mishnah again. Hanot omehem enosin agaban chayav. You put something on, you're going to be chayav. Now, in our Mishnah, we're talking about a sela. It's a rock. So it's a mess. So how did you get the item to the top of the rock? Obviously, what you had to have done is gone over the 10 tefachim ceiling and placed it on the top. So in other words, it traveled through a makom pater. So how is your question any different than our Mishnah? So the Gemara's answer is, well, maybe our Mishnah is talking about a needle. You know, needles are really small. So the Gemara says, so what? Machat nami. Who cares how small the needle is? To get the needle to the top of the rock, you're going to need to go through the makom pater. So how's the needle solving anything? So de islay mursa. Inami deramia becharitza. So the Gemara says, well, maybe our Mishnah is talking about the following. Either A, it's a rock, but the rock has a small ledge right along the side of it. And let's say the ledge dips below 10 tefachim. So in other words, the ledge is 9 tefachim. Now, the fact that there's a little ledge on the rock, look, the rock is essentially 10 tefachim tall. So the rock is a Rishus HaYachid. And that little ledge that's, let's say, 9 tefachim off the ground, it's not gonna lose its status of a Rishus HaYachid. That little ledge will also be a Rishus HaYachid. But by there being a little ledge over there, what I'm able to do now is directly transfer the item from the Rishus HaRabim to this Rishus HaYachid, and I won't have to go through a makom pater. Or the Gemara gives another suggestion, charitza. Maybe there's a crack in the rock. So in other words, what I could basically do is I could worm the needle up the crack, and so that when I don't have to now take the needle and put it over the top of the rock, I could worm it through the crack, and then basically now have it lay right on the top of the rock. And so therefore the needle doesn't have to go through a makom patur. Now again, these are obviously forced explanations of our Mishnah, what we'll call dechuyim, but it could be that that's what the Mishnah is talking about, but had it been that you went actually through a makom patur, you'd be patur. So Amar of Mesha, and the Gemara ends the discussion over there. Now, okay. Amar of Mesha. Let's pause over here. Let me go back to my question that I asked just a moment ago. Okay, now, again, the question of the Gemara, which the Gemara pretty much left unresolved, although, let's go over our list. Rava, Abaye, and Rav Yosef all feel that this is not much of a question. But at least according to Rav Mordechai, the question was, I'm taking it, I'm throwing it from the Rishus Rab to the top of the Rishus Yachid, and obviously I had to traverse through a Makom Patur. Now, I asked the question earlier, where does the Makom Patur end? Meaning the Makom Patur for sure is above 10 Tefachim. This area over here is for sure Makom Patur. An unidentified area. Right? An exempt area. How about over the top of the stone? So as I mentioned earlier, I alluded to earlier, this area over here may possibly be Makom Patur. Now, how could that be? We know, we learned earlier in the Masechta, the Rishus Yachid is Ola L'Rakia. A number of Rishonim, I believe it starts with the Ramban, but you're going to find this amongst all the Sephardic Rishonim, they say it like as follows. There basically are two different types of Rishus Yachid. It's an interesting discussion. A little bit beyond the scope of the Daf, but there are two different types of Rishus Yachid. There's a Rishus Yachid, which is a house, meaning walls with an inside, a content inside. And then there's the Rishus Yachid, which we're talking about, which is a stone. So the Rash, or the Ritva, or all these Sephardic Rishonim, they basically say like this. When you have a house with an interior, so then the status of the Rishus Yachid is Ola Adar Rakia. It just goes up. The area above is not a Makom Patur. The area above is a Rishus Yachid. However, if you have just a stone, so it's a Rishus Yachid, but it's a lower level Rishus Yachid. It's a different type of Rishus Yachid. So there, the item itself is a Rishus Yachid. Items resting on the very top of it have the status of resting on a Rishus Yachid, but anything above it is a Makom Patur. It's an interesting argument. And they say, in other words, it reads beautifully in our Gemara, meaning what they say is that when I take an item, I throw it onto the rock, it's traveling through a Makom Patur, not just here, but even here as well. And it's only when it actually rests on the top is it now resting on the Rishus Yachid. Okay. It's just a thought-provoking idea.
Resting on it, not the same as being in.
Agreed. Okay, by Rav Yochanan. Okay, we're going on in the Gemara. We're about a third of the way down. Kosav Rishus Aram Gavol Yevein Rachav Arba. Umukaf le Carmelis. Okay, so I have walls. And it is sorry. it is 10 tefachim high, but the actual thickness of the wall is not 4x4. So umukaf le Carmelis, va'asur rishus yachid. But here's the story. The area right around this building, okay, is a Carmelis. And essentially now what we're doing is, well, let me just first say, and then I'll give you a visual, is that these walls now are creating Rishus Yachid, obviously, and I'm going to throw something on the very top of the wall. What's the halacha? Okay, let me make sure you see this. It's really important to see this. Okay, I'm looking at it from the top. Okay, it's very simple. I created walls. Now, the walls have a particular thickness to them, so I'll create the thickness of the walls, and I throw something onto the wall. Now, the inside area is for sure Rishus Yachid. Okay? Whatever the dimensions are, whatever they are. But I'm not throwing it into the area, I'm throwing it right onto the top of the wall. Now, I threw it from a Rishus Rabin.
It's not 4x4, the thickness.
Huh? And the thickness of the wall is not 4x4. Okay. And I threw from a Rishus HaRabim. Now, just to make it a little bit more complicated, the area that the Rosh Yachid was around was an area of what's called a Karmelis. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in the past. A Karmelis is neither Rosh Hashanah nor Rosh Yachid. Okay. And that complicates it just a little bit, but that's not the main point of the Gemara. And I throw something from the Rosh Hashanah to the top of the wall, and that top of the wall now is not 4x4. Was I Mechal Shabbos? Is that the Malacha of Hachnasa? Going from the Rosh Hashanah to the top of the wall. And essentially the Gemara is going to make the following argument. Of course it is. Because even though the top of the wall is not a dimension of 4x4, but look, what are these walls doing? They're creating a Rosh Hashanah. So now let's just invoke a very simple argument. If the walls are creating a Rosh Hashanah, can't you argue that the walls themselves also have the status of the Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah, part of the
wall.
It's part of the wall.
Okay, so let's see the Gemara inside. And it lands on the wall itself. Would you want to make the argument that the walls themselves are makom pater? Oh, Dilma. It's like the walls themselves are filled in. Amr Ula Kavachomer. Ula says it's a logical deduction. If the walls are creating the Rosh Hashanah for the interior, don't you think the walls themselves also have the status of a Rosh Hashanah? I'll tell you what. After the daf, I'll tell you. No, it's fine. It's a fair question. Tosus discusses it.
Okay.
It's more than a fair question. So, I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi, I'm Rav, V'chein I'm Rav Yitzchak, I'm Rav Yochanan, Kosev Rishos Rav Gavol Yerveinu Rachav Arba, Umukav L'Kamlis V'Asav Rishos Yachad Azorg V'Nachal Gabav Chayav. L'Acherim Osem Mechitza L'Atzmo L'Kol Shekein. And the Gemara says, okay, and it's the same point that we just made. It's reiterated by Rav Yitzchak, I'm Rav Yochanan. Okay, the Gemara says yes. The Kavachomer is a very legitimate bona fide Kavachomer. By Rav Yochanan. We have time for a couple more. Let's do one more. By Rav Yochanan, Bor v'tishav akar mimenu chul yavi hishlimu la'asara. Okay, the pit's 9 tefachim deep. And what do? I take dirt out of the pit. I dig in the pit. And it's now, after having finished digging, now the pit is 10 tefachim deep. So really, what just happened is two things occurred almost concurrently. And that is that I took something out of the pit. The pit right now is not a Rosh Hashanah, because you need to be 10 tefachim deep in order to be a Rosh Hashanah. So I took something out of the pit, and as I'm taking it out of the pit, I'm transforming the pit
into
a Rosh Hashanah. And so now this is as classic as it gets. So we have now two concurrent activities. So how do we view it? So Bor v'tishav akar mimenu chul yavi hishlimu la'asara mahu.
What's the question about the
dirt,
taking the dirt out?
Do we look at these two events concurrently and say, look, I know it happened at the same time, but essentially the way we can construct the sentence is, I took something from a Rosh Hashanah. Now, it wasn't Rosh Hashanah when I took it, but as I'm taking the dirt out now, it has become a Rosh Hashanah, and so therefore you'll be chayev. Ola mechayev. Or the Gemara says you're not going to be chayev because as I'm taking it out, it wasn't a Rosh Hashanah. It's only after I dislodge the dirt, only then does it become a Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara says, now the argument could be that look, since it wasn't a mechitza of 10, so therefore you're not going to be chayev. Bor yod v'nasan lasocha chulya umi atamahu. So let's do it the other way. Now, let's put dirt into the pit. The pit started as 10 tefachim. And now by throwing dirt into the pit, I've now basically filled the pit just a little bit. Enough to remove the status of the Rosh Hashanah. So, mahu, anachas chefetz v'silik mechitza ba'ada hadad dekaas mechayev. Look, on one hand, you could simply say, I place something in the pit 10 tefachim. Therefore, I'm going to be chayev. Olo mechayev, or maybe you're not going to be chayev. Why are you not going to be chayev? Because right now, look at the job that I just did. I filled in the pit just a little bit. It no longer has status of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says, I think I know the answer based on the following Mishnah. I'm throwing something against a wall. Now it makes a difference whether it lands above 10 tefachim or below 10 tefachim, as we discussed earlier today. But right now we're just going to focus on one point. The Havinan Baba Halo Nach Ram Rav Yochanan Bedvela Shmena Shaninu. First of all, how does it stick? The answer is it's sticky. Okay. The Amai Hakam Amai Marba Amos. But here the Gemara now wants to focus on one point. If I am exactly 4 Amos away from that wall, and I threw something at the wall, so the item itself did not traverse exactly 4 Amos. Because the thickness of the item that I threw obviously will minimize the shear. Now I know we're talking about inches over here, but don't focus on that. Just focus on the concept. Conceptually, even though the item has not traversed a total 4 Amos, nevertheless, it's considered as if it traveled 4 Amos.
The front of it did. The back of it.
Okay. Oh, good. Hasam lo mevatale, hacha mevatale. And the Gemara says it's a very big difference. Because in the case of the, I'm throwing the sticky date against the wall, there's no minimization of the shear because we're planning on taking the date off the wall and just wiping it and eating it. But in other words, the date itself is not mevatel. However, when I'm taking dirt and I'm putting dirt on the ground, so I plan on it keeping there, it's going to be mevatel. It actually will reduce the dimensions of the pit so that the pit no longer is 10 tefachim, but now it's 9 tefachim. So I see a very big difference between the case of throwing a sticky date against the wall versus putting dirt in the pit. Adkan, we're going to stop over here. So today, we finished up our discussion of the Krashim and the dimensions of the Krashim and the dimensions of the Rishus HaRavim, and then we started our discussion of definition of Rishus HaYachid. We talked about throwing onto a stone, throwing onto a mound, throwing into a pit, the possibility of combining the two. I suggested today, based on the Rishonim, that there are two different types of Rishus HaYachid, a bona fide Rishus HaYachid and the stone Rishus HaYachid, and then a series of questions about whether or not I either contribute to making something a Rishus HaYachid or remove something from being a Rishus HaYachid. How do I view that at the same time of doing an Akira or an Anacha? And these were our discussions for today. We'll stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Continued Refuah Shlema for Binyamin Zeva Cohen, Ben Shimon Rivka, and for Avram Rafal Ben Adis Itka. Rabbi Hanani Ben Akash Amar Tzikos Baruch Hu Zakasol Ficha Chir Ben Tzor Mitzvah Shanem Anach Hafeitz Amantziko Yadil Turav Yadir.